Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
There's a lot of evidence that is going to be gone through in the case of Rex Huerman, the Gilgo Beach murderer, allegedly, Long Island serial killer, allegedly. To help us kind of try and wrap our mind around the sheer gravity of how much is going to have to be sifted through from a legal standpoint is former prosecutor and head of Tribeca Blue Consulting, Lori Gilbertson, joining us. Lori, what is your thoughts on all these things they brought in and the fact that this is a 13-year investigation with a lot of different leads?
Well, there's quite a bit of it, as you just mentioned, and the prosecution is doing exactly what they are legally obligated to do, which is to start turning it all over during this discovery process to the defense. The judge will, due to the voluminous nature of everything, give the defense time, adequate time to start looking through all those materials and to start examining all of this evidence against their client. You know, they're dealing with cell phone records, they're dealing with emails, they're going to be dealing with DNA. So they're going to be dealing with photos, as you said, all this surveillance, you know, 100 hours of surveillance. That takes a long time to look through.
Sure.
100 hours. To look through it. So this requires some time and some manpower. I expect the defense will continue to ask for more time, and the defense will continue to ask for absolutely everything in this case. That can be a bit of a delay tactic, and I assume the prosecution is just going to continue to respond, fulfilling their legal obligations here. But it may delay things a while just due to how much there is to review.
With a case like this, with so many years of having to be combed through, probably charges that still haven't been filed, how long do you see it being before this thing actually does make it to trial?
A while, yeah. Certainly. I mean, look, you've got speedy trial statutes which say that you need to go to trial within a particular amount of time. In a case like this, I think going to trial, even in a year, for a serial murder like this with three victims, where no doubt the defense will make a motion to sever those trials, to maybe have him tried separately for each of those. So there's so much motion practice to go through, so much discovery to go through, probably definitely some hearings on various evidence, probably some hearings on some expert evidence. I think a year would be the absolute minimum for this to start a trial. Probably a bit longer than that.
Would it help or hurt Rex if this were to be broken up into individual trials for each individual murder?
Well, if the prosecution, as I imagine they are going to here, is going to show that there are similarities, you know, with all of these victims here, and that he had a certain MO, he had a certain type he was looking for, he had a certain way that he killed these women, then it would help him to have those severed. Obviously, if you're being tried for one murder in front of a jury, it looks a little different than if you're being tried for three.
Sure.
And then you're a serial killer. So I do not think that these trials would be severed at all. The only way that might happen is if the defense were able to show it was way more prejudicial than probative for them to all be tried together and that this was going to cause so much damage to him. And I don't see that happening in a case like this.
What's your take on the family? Obviously, they've been through a lot of trauma. And then, of course, being ripped out of their home, the authorities coming in, investigating for 11 days, ripping things apart. Obviously, we got a chance to look at the house and into it as well. I don't think it's a far stretch to make an assumption here that this was a hoarder house. As far as who was doing the hoarding, I don't know. It could have been Rex, could have been her, could have been a little bit of everybody. He had 200 some guns. That's a sign right there. But then the boxes, and it's not just, hey, the FBI went and ripped up your house. It was, I think the FBI went into a hoarder house and had to go through everything that was being hoarded there. Along with her making the statement the other day, which I'm not trying to be disparaging to them at all. I'm just finding it bizarre that my children are crying themselves to sleep at night. We're talking about a 20-some and 30-some-year-old adult. Usually a statement you'd make about a 5 or a 10-year-old. Not necessarily this, but we have, you know, learned one has some developmental or learning disabilities. But does it speak to more so their life that they endured under Rex that a statement like that would even be made? It almost seems arrested development in a certain sort of way.
Well, we're going to learn more as this plays out. And my feeling is we're going to learn more about this family, about what the conditions were, about how he was with his family. And I could barely look at any of the video and the pictures of that house. It just so shocked me, those kind of conditions. And what I see from his wife in the statements that she's made, and it's not an unusual thing to see in a lot of cases, is that there is just so much kind of misplaced angst and anger at the trauma that she has most likely suffered, certainly, and at the trauma that she's suffering now. And this real misplacement of the trauma onto investigators, onto the FBI, onto the police, when in actuality, the person responsible for the trauma is her husband.
Yeah.
So that's something that may change over time, and we may hear different statements from her. It just really seemed to me, from reading about it and seeing it, this is just this kind of primal, anguished cry from someone who's life has been absolutely turned upside down and is now having to face the reality of what I would guess she probably had an inkling of all along.
I don't place
that with any evidence, just from experience and from looking at the facts of this case.
Yeah, I would think so too. I don't necessarily put her into an accomplice role or anything of that nature, but I think hindsight might be 20/20, where, you know, many people speak of that, where looking back, you can go, well, those were some odd things. But of course, no one wants to think that their father, that their husband is killing hookers when they're on vacation or when they're away for business.
Right. So. It's a willful blindness. We see it.
Yep.
And we don't know. There haven't been anything that's come up as to any abuse she may have suffered or anything the children may have suffered. So when you asked about the statement of her kids crying themselves to sleep at night, yeah, it sounds a little odd. But this whole situation is incredibly odd.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.